This is Radio Today broadcasting in Johannesburg on 1485 AM and nationally on DSTV Audio Channel 869.
Changing Destiny is proudly brought to you by WEM Media, right here on Radio Today. Radio Today, radio that delivers.
Welcome to Changing Destiny. My name is Paul Pereira. Now, how we view history, particularly in divided societies, is often what academics would call a matter of contestation. So we contest what different views of heroes are, of mythologies, of the founding myths of what is now a new republic. And in a way, that's a pity, because it is important in all societies, whether it's their George Washington's or their Nelson Mandela's, that there is some common acceptance of who the heroes who built the society or who brought it about were. And one of the names that you may have heard a lot of over the years of the conflict in South Africa that brought us to 1994 and subsequently and certainly in recent days is that of an ANC Umkhonto Sizwe cadre, Solomon Mahlangu. He was executed just over almost 40 years ago this month in 1979 in Pretoria at the Central Prison. And he was executed for a conviction of murder, but that is highly contested that it was not perhaps a politically motivated execution. And after that, during the 1980s, he was regarded and extolled as a hero by the ANC in exile. It named one of its colleges in Tanzania after him. And subsequently, you will see now across cities in South Africa, many streets named after him. There's been a court case just this last week between the economic freedom fighters and the Mahlangu family over commemoration of him. And it is a name that you will hear more and more of, not least of which because President Jacob Zuma himself has launched a fund or has been at the launch of a fund of bursaries in the name of Solomon Mahlangu. Who was Solomon Mahlangu? And can we separate myth from truth? Can we speak to the deeper person, take him out of the politics a little bit, understand what happened with him, and who is this person that we hear about more and more, but sometimes we're hearing about it in today's context or today's needs. What was the story in 1979? And to help us find out, we have the co-screenplay writer of a film that's being released in September. It's called Kalushi. It is about Solomon Mahlangu, and so we have the pleasure today of a bit of a preview of the thinking that is in the film and a little bit of behind the scenes. This has been a project long in the making. It started back about 4 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, and we'll be chatting with Leon Otto. And as I say, he is the co-screenplay writer of the film. And he'll be joining us just after we've listened to a song which came out in the early 1980s overseas, was a big hit, and it is an anti-apartheid song of the time, and it is by Latin Quarter, and it is called No Rope As Long As Time.
Tell me how you could for all your care.
Welcome back. You're on Changing Destiny with Paul Pereira, and today we're chatting with Leon Otto, and he is the co-screenplay writer along with Mandla Dube, who's also the filmmaker of a film called Kalushi, and it's a film about the ANC struggle hero Solomon Mahlangu, a hero to many people in the liberation struggle and a name you will hear very often. But to others, he might, and particularly people at the time in 1979, who were, I would say, especially whites, probably regarded as a common murderer. So tonight we want to untangle the story of, take out myth, find out who was Solomon Mahlangu, what is the story, and some of the claims made around him, how true can they be. And to do that, we'll be chatting with Leon. Leon, welcome aboard.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's been a long project. Tell us how this came about, why you did it, and are we just sitting with another anti-apartheid film because that's the fashion?
Well, first of all, thank you. Yeah, thanks for inviting me onto your show. It's been a long process. I met Mandla in 2011. We were at a script development workshop together. And we were both actually at that stage working on different projects, and then Mandla initially wanted me to act in the movie. At that stage, it was the main antagonist was this police officer that sort of chases down Solomon Mahlangu, and it was quite a different project at that stage. And I got involved on the writing side quite quickly, and we developed it as a four-part drama series for SABC. Then some of the funders pulled out, and we decided, Mandla and I decided, let's try and write a screenplay and see where it goes. And it's been, since 2011, 2012,
And tough to write a screenplay that doesn't kind of just fit all the cliches of what is a very recent conflict.
Yeah, I think we sat down and one of the things we wanted to do was not write a standard anti-apartheid movie. I think that time has come and gone. I think apartheid is almost becoming a distant memory, something that people just reference, and there's a lot of myth almost around it, and a lot of history getting lost and facts and getting lost in because as time goes by. I think we set out to tell a story first of all, I think, and then and to try and find a memory of Solomon Mahlangu that we could honor in this story. I mean, he is a hero to a lot of people, but to many, they don't know his story. They don't know
his actual story.
You know, like you said yourself, to some, he's just a terrorist. He's just a convicted murderer, and he should hang like any. He should have hanged like any other murderer.
Why Kalushi? Is that a reference to Kalashnikov?
No. It's a reference to the name he got at his initiation ceremony, and it means shepherd. I think it's in Debele, it means shepherd.
Okay, so it's like a clan.
A clan. It's like Madiba. It's Kalushi is almost a similar, and it's also because to some extent he is the archetypal shepherd figure leading his people to freedom or leading his flock. You know that.
But let's talk a bit about this journey, because he's not involved in the June 1976 uprising that started in Soweto and then spread through townships of South Africa.
No.
But it's not that long after that he decides to make a move into the liberation movements.
Yeah. I think these things are rarely planned. I think that if the uprising just happened to happen in Soweto at that time, it could have easily happened in Mamelodi. And Mamelodi is the same as...
And he's from Mamelodi. Let's just put the context.
Which is Pretoria. He was living in outside Pretoria in Mamelodi. His mom was a domestic worker at that time, working in Pretoria with a white family. His brother... Lucas, slightly older than him, was a prison warder. So I think the Pretoria prison, nearby prison. And Solomon dropped out of school just before matric, and to help support the family and to...
He was a hawker for a while.
He was a hawker, yeah. He was selling vegetables, sweets, whatever he could sell on the trains, on the side of the road. Like you see hawkers, you know, trying to make a living. I mean,
today,
it's their business model. That was his business model.
What triggered him to say, I'm going to leave the country, I'm going to go find military training?
We don't know. To be quite honest, we don't know. We portrayed in the film. We spoke to the people that met him afterwards in outside of South Africa, and we spoke to his family and so on. And he left a note. The note is a part of sort of Africana, South African history, and in the sense that it is. It says, "But Lucas." I'm going away, don't bother looking for me, you know, and that was even entered into evidence at the court case. The police eventually found that note, you know, but we give a reason for it, and we verbalize it in the film, and that we got especially from research talking to the guys who were young at that stage, the cadres and other of the people that were involved in various aspects of the liberation movement. And yeah,
he moves to Mozambique.
Yeah,
what happens there?
He in Mozambique, first of all, they encountered a I think it was a Frelimo troops that was quite hostile with them because it's not their country and what were they doing there. And then they took them to an ANC, supposed ANC safe house in Maputo, but it wasn't safe then. And also the ANC didn't plan for June 16th.
No, it was a surprise to everybody, them included.
It wasn't part of their mission, and it just happened. And the after effect of that was that a lot of the young people who felt the brunt of apartheid decided to do something about it, and it was like being called up for national service. They wanted to go and fight for their country, just on the other side of
and there were waves of them, and nobody was prepared for it or
well,
how to receive them.
I mean. They in the story we've got a character that sort of helps them with this transition to get them out of South Africa, and that was a lot of the time that's how it happened. It was you knew somebody that knew somebody that knew somebody at the ANC, and they would then sort of by hook or by crook try and get you out of the country, and then they knew somebody there in Maputo that you need to talk to. But I mean, it's 1976. It's not like you've got cell phones and you can send an email.
Yeah, it's only 1 year after Mozambique has become independent itself. Yeah, so it's not a place.
So it's still a place of conflict. So they essentially ran into a place of conflict. They got moved because the ANC couldn't handle all the influx of all of these troops.
These guys,
guys wanting to sign up to fight the war. They got moved to a refugee camp in outside Shai Shai in Mozambique. So they were there essentially trapped for 6 months. They kept on trying to write letters and trying to get, because a lot of the stuff was contraband, like you weren't supposed to have this or that or whatever. So they were in the refugee camp for 6 months, and then eventually they got word through to the ANC, and the ANC actually sent a plane, or MK sent a plane, and they actually sent Jacob Zuma on that plane.
He was head for a long time. I don't know if he was at that time of ANC military intelligence, wasn't he?
Yeah, I was at that stage. I think he was head of the Transvaal mechanism, what they used to call the mechanism. So it was like a battalion similar to that, and also because it had military intelligence, they changed the name, you know. So yeah, and he came and he took all of the guys, all of the recruits, over to Angola.
And that's where the ANC at least had training camps.
Yeah, they at least had training camps there, and I think there was a lot of at that stage Soviet involvement. So then they got to those camps, but they essentially had less than a year left to train them to come back, and because the ANC command at that stage had sort of figured that it's going to be the first year anniversary of June 16th in 1977, that's coming up. People like to commemorate these events, and if the uprising was such a bloodbath, then it just gives an excuse for conflict to happen. It gives an excuse for people to get shot, and even the apartheid government at that stage, they staged a whole battalion outside of Soweto just on the ready for the first year's anniversary.
Before we get back to South Africa, we're in Angola. It's 1976, the height of the civil war there, really the first stages of it.
Yeah.
And Mashlangu himself, he notes, and it comes through in the various histories that have been written, but this is a black-on-black conflict. What on earth is going on, and why are we even bothering to fight in another place when this is happening? Tell me that story a little bit.
I think what we also portrayed in the film was that the realization of some of the characters that it's not as clear-cut as black versus white. And that you can find in Africa black versus black struggle and liberation and all of that can happen. So I think it was clear cut in South Africa to a large extent based on race. But even in the film we try and show this, because this is from the research we found, there's some white guys left the country to go and join MK.
Yeah, and a lot of black guys were in the security forces.
Complex. And it was extremely complex. If you look at Solomon's brother, he worked for correctional services. You know, he was a prison warden, so he was essentially serving
the system.
The system on that level. You know,
he comes back, and what's never been clear to me is what the purpose exactly of his mission. It's around the anniversary, but what's the mission?
It was part of a bigger plan. The ANC command at that stage, because they knew that there was going to be a lot of attention on Soweto, they decided to send three of these trainees or of their combatants out to areas outside of Soweto, so the surrounding
places
areas
where they weren't expected.
Where they weren't expected, but also to detract attention away from it. So instead of having the army there, the army would then have to go to all of these different areas.
Were they to choose a target? Or?
No, they were given clear targets. They first had to get back into the country. They first had to pick up all their ammunition and their dead letter box, as they used to call them, and meet up with their contacts. And they got missions. And their mission, Solomon's group, their mission was to blow up an electricity pylon at a substation outside Tembisa, I think in the East Rand.
Now, things go awry, to put it mildly. These guys get into Joburg, and somehow they look suspicious. Tell us.
It wasn't part of their mission, first of all. Okay, they were sent to the East Rand, and they arrived at the East Rand, and they stashed their stuff in the East Rand. And then on June 13th, for some reason, they decided to go to Soweto and take some of their guns, some of their ammunition, some of their hand grenades and pamphlets. And what we figure, and also talking again to some of the guys that were there, and even some of the guys that were there in the camps with them, is that these guys, a lot of them were so frustrated because they wanted to go and train. They were stuck in a concentration camp, in a refugee camp, for 6 months. They got basic training, and they wanted to go back and fight. And
not blow up an electricity.
No, pile. Not go and blow up something. In the movie, we make it their target a police station, because a lot of the targets were police stations in outside of Joburg and outside of Soweto. So, but their actual target was a soft target, and that was the whole point of the mission, was also no civilian casualties. You know, they had to avoid civilian casualties at all costs. So when it started going wrong in downtown Joburg and on Diagonal Street, because that's actually where it started happening, was on Diagonal Street and downtown Joburg, and they had a confrontation with a black policeman, who, because there were heightened police presence in Joburg.
So another irony. 3 days, already,
and this guy was probably trying to shake them down because he saw these three country bumpkins walking with their suitcases, because they had the guns and the ammunition in suitcases.
And it all goes wrong. They are discovered. And they flee.
Yeah, they start running.
But one they go the very much the wrong sort of place to go. Tell us.
Because as far as we know, both of them came from Mamelodi. We know Solomon came from Mamelodi.
Yeah.
Okay, so downtown Joburg is...
It's
a city. It's not a township. It's and you're running in Diagonal Street, okay? Now, picture this. Two young black guys in 1977, downtown Joburg, running with submachine guns. So they're running with these guns and shooting in the air. You know, it's chaos. It's if it had to happen today in Sandton Square, You know, that's absolute chaos kind of thing.
And they were running straight towards John Forster Square, which
was... Well, they eventually turned and ran, started running straight toward the John Forster Square. And then they ran into John Orr's warehouse, which is diagonal across John Forster Square. And they there they got separated. Solomon got through the warehouse, and he was already getting away when... He heard shots, and it was Mondi, his companion, one of the three, that walked into a room where guys were having their morning tea, office, in the warehouse, and he was looking for Solomon, and we don't know exactly what was said. There's some court transcripts that we used in the case, in the movie, and... He shot two guys in the
room.
Two
civilians. Yeah.
And then, long story short, Mondi at that shooting, he got beaten up, and also during interrogation, he suffered brain damage. He couldn't stand trial. Solomon came back. He gave himself up, and he stood trial for the two murders.
On the old English principle of common purpose, yes. Even though he didn't actually do the shooting, he wasn't even present with the shooting.
Well, it's the common purpose is to I'm not a legal expert, I should always say, but to put it simply is, if we plan to rob a bank, you go inside, I wait outside in the car, you shoot somebody, I'm also guilty, I'm also going to stand trial based on
why your... Then was there such an outcry internationally and at home at his hanging, which in those days was the penalty for murder, when this appears at face value to be a straightforward case?
Well, I think the common purpose is problematic to begin with as a law. It's a very old law, and it has been used for political reasons, and I think here it's been used for political reasons. It's also been recently used in the case of Marikana, you know, again for political reasons, to get a lot of people based on one crime. And I don't think it was...
It was also, I think, used against the Burestaat guys that were up for treason, trying to overthrow the state.
I think, you know, it is a problematic law because,
We're already on 28 minutes. We've only got 30. So, just quickly, Mashlangu is hanged. There are last heroic words attributed to him. How could anybody possibly know what his last words were, since his family and his comrades weren't with him when he was hanged?
Those are supposedly the words he said to his mother, to his mother. So it wasn't, it's not like his true last words.
So it's not
words.
Literally the last words, but it's the last words recorded.
In the film, we took liberty of putting it in the court case. So it's his, the judge gives him the opportunity to say, my blood will nourish the tree of freedom, tell my people I love them. So it's and the fight continues, continue.
And Leon, when does your film come out?
It's in September. There's going to be special screenings around June 16th this year, commemorate all of this in June 16, Solomon, Mahlangu, and so on. But the film will be released in September.
Thank you very much for coming to the studio to discuss it. What is a topic very few of us know in that sort of detail and with that sort of complexity. Okay. How does one find out more information about the film if listeners would like to?
There's a trailer out. I know there's a new trailer coming out soon. The film is also going to Cannes, but I think the best thing is Google it. There's a Facebook page, they can follow that.
There'll be stuff on YouTube.
The trailers, the interviews with Mandla Dube, the director, and the key cast, Thabo Rometsi. And it's going to be a great film. I think we're trying to tell a story, and it happens to be relevant to South Africa, not only then, but now, you know, with the students and with Fees Must Fall and all of that. I think it's a relevant topic.
Thank you very much. Indeed it is. Thank you, Leon Otto, and thank you for introducing to us the film Kalushi, the story about Solomon Mahlangu, told, I think, probably with the right sort of distance from the time of conflict to bring in complexity of humanity. And that film coming out in September, but already on YouTube, you can get trailers. And thank you very much. And listeners, thank you for joining me and for joining Ntumbisi Kumisa, my producer. And we will join you again, as I hope you will join us, this time next week on Changing Destiny. Goodbye.